Since the dawn of recorded history, humankind has depicted images and told stories of monsters. Inconceivable beings possessing impossible abilities. Things dredged from the nightmares of our primordial ancestors, which have been with us for as long as anyone can remember. Feared and even worshipped, these are things inseparable from our history, and perhaps even ourselves. Things that our minds tell us cannot exist, and yet, both classical scribes and contemporary witnesses will say, yes, they do. We now enter a place where the lines between history and legend become difficult to see, where creatures we don't dare believe in make appearances in the real world, and where our ideas about what exists and what is imagined are put to the test. Welcome to the House of Monsters. Welcome to House of Monsters, presented by the Small Town Monsters Broadcasting Network. My name is Aaron Deese, and this is Volume 3, Snowmen Most Abominable. The so-called House of Monsters may, for the sake of continuing the analogy, mount a sign which reads, "No Vacancy," at the end of the front walk. Its rooms are packed with existing and long-term occupants, denizens of the sky, sea, air, and spirit realm, each with their own claim to fame, and each well-deserving of the title of monster. But there is one creature, one of the first to move in, who would not be well-suited by the walls of any standard house as we might imagine it. This being prefers far more isolated, less hospitable, and for the purposes of cryptozoology, difficult to investigate locales to rest its head. Today we mount a search for this creature, as so many others have done, in hopes that we might find ourselves face to face with a snowman most abominable. Off we go into the mountains of the Himalayas in search of the Yeti. From the outset, let's be clear. We are not talking about Bigfoot. Bigfoot, or Sasquatch, have become blanket terms used to refer to any number of upright humanoid ape-like creatures. These names find their roots in North America in the 1950s. The Yeti, on the other hand, is a legend of distinctly Asian origin, and stories of it have been told since well before Bigfoot fever kicked off in the US. So what, exactly, is a Yeti? The creature goes by many names. The name Yeti is a compound word, coming from the root Tibetan terms for rocky place and bear. In Chinese, he is known as Zhuren, snowman. Another Tibetan term is Migui or Migo, meaning wild man. And in Nepali communities where Yeti is not commonly used, the creature is sometimes referred to as Bunmanchi, jungle man. The popular Western moniker, the abominable snowman, would not appear until 1921. But our search begins a little bit earlier, before the dawn of the 20th century. The Journal of the Asiatic Society of Calcutta would publish an article in 1832 by a man named B.H. Hodgson. It was an overview of mammals in Nepal, and in a subsection concerning known primates, Hodgson provided the following anecdote. "My shooters were once alarmed in the Kachar by the apparition of a wild man, possibly an Aurang, but I doubt their accuracy. They mistook the creature for a kakodemon or rakshas and fled from it instead of shooting it. It moved, they said, erectly, was covered with long, dark hair, and had no tail." The two creatures Hodgson references, the kakodemon and the rakshas, also known as the rakshasa, are demonic entities of myth from Europe and India respectively. These creatures are also known in some mythologies to be shapeshifters. Despite the vagueness of Hodgson's report, and the fact that it first appeared as no more than a tongue-in-cheek footnote in an otherwise not paranormal text, it was sufficient to plant a seed which has flourished in the now almost 200 intervening years since publication. Also interesting is that the term Yeti does not appear in this report. English mountaineer Frank Smythe, who gained global notoriety for his exploits into the Himalayas, was told by one of his Sherpa guides that anyone who sees one dies or is killed. Smythe would provide what may be the earliest evidence of the Yeti to appear in the 1900s. In 1937, he took a photograph of a long track of footprints in a fresh snowfall in the Himalayan mountains, and it was taken as proof to many of the Yeti's existence. The photo was published in Popular Science in 1952 and has since appeared in dozens of books and publications, but analysis by experts revealed that the tracks actually belong to a bear. Smythe would apparently accept this conclusion, despite his initial belief that the tracks belonged to a Yeti. Despite the debunking of a one-time popular piece of evidence, the Yeti would continue to captivate adventurers and mountaineers. In 1951, Eric Shipton would make the following report after an expedition to Mount Everest.
It was on one of the glaciers of the Min Lung Basin, at a height of about 19,000 feet, that, late one afternoon, we came across those curious footprints in the snow, the report of which has caused a certain amount of public interest in Britain. We did not follow them further than was convenient, a mile or so, for we were carrying heavy loads at the time. And besides, we had reached a particularly interesting stage of the exploration of the basin. I have in the past found many sets of these curious footprints and have tried to follow them, but have always lost them on the moraine or rocks at the side of the glacier. These particular ones seem to be very fresh, probably not more than 24 hours old. When Murray and Bordelon followed us a few days later, the tracks had been almost obliterated by melting. Sen Ten Sing, who had no doubt whatever the creatures, for there had been at least two, that had made the tracks were Yetis, or wild men, told me that 2 years before, he and a number of other Sherpas had seen one of them at a distance of about 25 yards at Thiang Bosch. He describes it as a half-man, half-beast, standing about 5 feet 6 inches, with a tall pointed head, its body covered with reddish-brown fur, but with a hairless face. He left no doubt as to his sincerity. The tracks were almost distorted by melting into oval impressions, slightly longer and a good deal broader than those made by our mountain boots. But here and there, where the snow covering the ice was thin, we came upon a well-preserved impression of the creature's foot. It showed 3 toes and a broad thumb to the side. What was particularly interesting was that where the tracks crossed a crevasse, one could see quite clearly where the creature had jumped and used its toes to secure purchase on the snow on the other side. We followed the tracks for more than a mile down the glacier before we got on to moraine-covered ice.
Bears are quite mobile creatures, able to move quickly over rough terrain and scale a variety of vertical surfaces. But this example of Marvel superhero-esque agility is likely beyond any known species of bear. Moreover, the 3-toed appendage with an adjoining thumb indicated by the tracks sounds, at least at first glance, decidedly unbear-like. Graham Hoyland, an adventurer, director, and author, has documented numerous run-ins with the Yeti on his website, including some of his own experiences. In 1986, in Namche Bazaar, which is the capital of the Sherpa Khumbu region, he received a report from a Sherpa who is the owner of a herd of Zo, which are a cross between yaks and cows. This man would claim that 20 years prior, sometime in the 1960s, that he had heard terrifying howls while grazing his cattle on an elevated pasture. Mortified, he and his fellow cattlemen hid out in a nearby cave until morning. When they emerged, they found 2 of the Zo had been slaughtered. So thoroughly slaughtered, in fact, that not even bones remained. Their attacker had left only blood and internal organs as evidence. The Sherpa that Hoyland met indicated that this was the work of a Zute, another indigenous term for the Yeti, which also translates as cattle bear, a reference to the Himalayan brown bear, according to some sources. In fact, this is probably a good time to mention that the term Yeti doesn't apply to just one creature. Various books and sources online point to different types of Yeti, a few of which were mentioned a moment ago. While the Yeti so many are familiar with sits at roughly the standard Sasquatch proportions, anywhere from 6 to 9 feet perhaps, the full scope of the Yeti in Himalayan folklore encompasses creatures ranging from as short as 3 or 4 feet and as tall as 15 feet or more. Interest in the Yeti would spike so dramatically in the 1950s that the Nepalese government would release an official set of rules specific to Yeti hunters. The document can be found today on the National Archives Catalog website, and reads as follows.
Royalty of RS 5000 Indian currency will have to be paid to His Majesty's Government of Nepal for a permit to carry out an expedition in search of Yeti. In case Yeti is traced, it can be photographed or caught alive, but it must not be killed or shot at except in an emergency arising out of self-defense. All photographs taken of the animal, the creature itself if captured, alive or dead, must be surrendered to the government of Nepal at the earliest time. News and reports throwing light on the actual existence of the creature must be submitted to the government of Nepal as soon as they are available, and must not in any way be given to the press or reporters for publicity without the permission of the government of Nepal.
There's a lot going on there. First, and most obviously, the Nepalese government seemed at some capacity to be taking the Yeti seriously. Or, at least, the people who were out there searching for it. The 5,000 in Indian currency translates to roughly $1,100 in American, or a little over 14 grand in 2024. This might seem an insurmountable obstacle to many, but there were in fact people with the means, and the desire, to chase the Yeti for themselves, despite the steep price tag. Some aficionados of Sasquatch research may have heard the name Tom Slick, or Thomas Baker Slick, Jr. Slick is an important figure in the history of cryptozoology, and something of a hero of mine. In order to keep this episode from turning into me rambling about Tom Slick for 20 minutes, I asked another personal hero and friend, Micah Hanks, to provide an overview of Slick's connection to the Yeti. If you're listening to this show, you probably know who Micah Hanks is, but just in case, Micah is an author, journalist, speaker, podcaster, and researcher, specializing in Sasquatch, UFOs, and all other sorts of inexplicable phenomena. A full summary of his resume is not possible herein, but suffice to say, he knows his stuff.
Tom Slick is really one of the most interesting characters in the history of cryptozoology, in my opinion, primarily because he was a really successful businessman, and he was also very philanthropic. He would often throw money behind scientific pursuits that many would consider to be pretty fringe, and that stands true today as well as it did in the 1950s, when he was funding and organizing expeditions to try and find the mythical Yeti, otherwise known as the Abominable Snowman, and shortly thereafter North American expeditions in search of what became known as Bigfoot. We also have Tom Slick to thank for bringing Peter Byrne, the legendary big game hunter turned conservationist, into the entire relic hominoid game, because it was Peter and his brother who led the expeditions in the Himalayas and thereafter also became involved in the North American pursuit of Sasquatch or Bigfoot. Now, I interviewed Peter Byrne many years ago and I asked him about Tom Slick, and he said that not only was he a great friend, but he was a really generous man. And Peter also said he remembered them on a few occasions chasing girls together. But they had obviously been very good friends, and Peter almost had a wistfulness in his voice as he remembered the tragic circumstances under which Tom Slick died. On October 6, 1962, he'd been a passenger on board a private aircraft when it crashed in Montana. And unfortunately, with the death of Tom Slick, this also officially brought to an end the expeditions that he had launched in North America in search of the Sasquatch. And despite only having been involved for a few years prior to his untimely death, what I don't think we can deny is that Tom Slick really played a significant role in popularizing the idea that these creatures existed, and the fact that there was a wealthy philanthropist who was putting money behind this perhaps gave these subjects a bit of credibility early on that they desperately needed. Although there are some other interpretations of why Slick might have been involved, especially in the hunt for the Yeti. One of the suppositions involves the idea that Tom Slick might have actually been working to some extent with the Central Intelligence Agency. And the idea there would be that the hunt for the Yeti was actually in itself a cover operation for espionage that was being carried out outside the normal jurisdiction of the United States intelligence community. Now, whether or not that's true, I will tell you this, I did find a CIA document that referenced Tom Slick, and in it, it was essentially saying that Tom Slick had had communications with the CIA on a number of different occasions, and each time, according to the author of the memo in question, he had been pitching various schemes to them, which they never seemed to really take very seriously. So we do know for certain that Tom Slick had actually been in contact with the CIA, but the CIA has never officially confirmed that he or anyone working for him had been informants, and that the search for the Himalayan Yeti was some kind of a front operation. No, quite the contrary, I think most of the evidence points to the fact that Tom Slick was legitimately interested in scientific mysteries, and that didn't stop with the Abominable Snowman or the Sasquatch. He was also interested in mysteries of the mind, and this is one of the reasons why he founded the Mind Science Foundation and a number of other R&D startups way back in the 1940s and 50s, many of which still remain in operation today. So the legacy of Tom Slick is indeed alive and well today, And I would say that really, if anything, he probably helped to bring serious attention to subjects like the Yeti and Sasquatch at a time when very few others would have. And that too has helped to sort of propel the study of these subjects right on into the present day.
As if impossible snow monsters weren't enough, millionaires, the CIA, and the earliest days of Bigfoot research have now been thrown into the mix. But Tom Slick's connection to the Yeti doesn't end there, and in fact, gets even stranger.
In my opinion, the story of the hand allegedly belonging to a Yeti that was discovered by Peter Byrne in the Pangbochi Monastery and smuggled out, I mean, it's got to be one of the best stories that combines elements of espionage and cryptozoology, maybe also a little splash of Invasion of the Body Snatchers, but I mean, it's a very strange story. And this all began during Tom Slick's Yeti investigations of the Himalayas, where he had tasked Peter Byrne with not only trying to find the Yeti, but if possible, to return with physical evidence of the creature. And so Peter had learned about this hand kept in the Pangbochi Monastery by a group of monks in Nepal, and they claimed it belonged to a Yeti. But the problem was, of course, they wouldn't let Peter Byrne leave with this Yeti hand. But determined to bring this sample back so that scientists could study it, Peter Byrne, along with Tom Slick, hatched a very unique plan, and it involved a very famous actor of the day, that was Jimmy Stewart, who, if Peter could successfully get the hand or a portion of it, agreed to bring this thing back with him to the United Kingdom. So as the story goes, all the aforementioned parties met for dinner, at which time Tom Slick produced a bag, and out of it he pulled out a mummified human hand and placed it on the table. The gist of the idea was this. No, he hadn't brought it for dessert, although I think somebody at the time actually joked about that. No, he was going to take this mummified hand, go to the Pangbochi Monastery, and substitute portions of the alleged Yeti hand with bone fragments from the human hand that he'd just acquired. So Peter Byrne goes and he does this. He said he used wire to help hold the entire thing together, and he was able to successfully get some of those samples back with him, but now they had to try and smuggle them out of the country. This, of course, is where Jimmy Stewart enters the picture, because he and his wife visit with Peter Byrne, they acquire the sample from him, and they put it in the lingerie case in Mrs. Stewart's luggage. Well, they make it all the way back to the UK with no problem, and then when they arrive at the hotel, they realize that the luggage with the lingerie in it was missing. And so the Stewarts freak out a little bit there for a moment, but shortly thereafter, they get a phone call from the front desk, and Mrs. Stewart says, it's the bellhop saying, I've got your luggage, may I bring this up to you? And when he arrives, she asks the young man rather timidly, you guys didn't have to go through that now, did you? And the poor kid kind of blushes and says, oh no, Mrs. Stewart, we would never go through a lady's lingerie case. And so he hands it to her, and once he leaves, the Stewarts close the door, and they open it, and sure enough, there inside is the specimen. And it was brought back, and it was studied by Dr. Osmond Hill in London. And then, you'd think you'd had the find of the century, it was actually forgotten for many, many years. That is until just a few years ago when they recovered the sample, and with modern DNA analysis, they were easily able to determine that the alleged Yeti hand from the Pangbochi Monastery was in fact a human hand. So no evidence of the Yeti, but it still makes for one heck of a good story.
And along with the millionaires and the CIA, we now have Hollywood royalty joining the search for the Yeti. Wow, seems an understatement. That may seem like a lot, but it all speaks to the way in which the legend of the Yeti has fascinated people from all walks of life for decades into centuries. Slick was, amongst other things, a college-educated inventor and scientist, not someone prone to taking wild tales on face value. As we've already touched on some of the characters which connect Sasquatch to Bigfoot, this seems like a great time to denote the differences. I reached out to another friend and colleague, Mr. Larry Beans Baxter, and asked for his take. Larry hosts the popular Alasquatch podcast and is a current resident of Alaska, where he's had numerous run-ins with strange goings-on in the Alaskan wilds.
The difference between the Yeti and the Sasquatch, in my opinion, is primarily geographical. You have the Yeti, and you see the media depictions of the Yeti as typically a white, like, snow beast type creature, and you know the Sasquatch is the brown forest-dwelling creature. And in my opinion, they're probably very similar. I don't think they're probably the same species, but they're very similar species. And in reality, a lot of Yeti sightings reports have reported Yetis of brown and dark colors, just like the North American Sasquatch. So they're probably somehow related, but probably not the same species. So the legacy of the Yeti has absolutely influenced the American perception of Bigfoot. You know, it started with Tom Slick and his expeditions to hunt for the Yeti. And then once Sasquatch was on Tom Slick's radar, you know, he realized, hey, I can do this exact same thing, but here on American soil, and it doesn't cost as much, and it's a similar type animal, and it just makes more sense to look for it here on your home turf than to travel all the way to the Himalayan mountains that are not such a hospitable terrain when you can do it here in relatively your own backyard. To mount a modern day expedition to look for the Yeti, I think like most problems, it would require a a large amount of money. But with that money, you would need to spend it wisely. You would certainly need the latest in technology for thermal equipment, DNA collection equipment, and including the environmental DNA equipment to get DNA from like water sources and such like that. Then, of course, you would have to have some local voices there with you to guide you. You know, nobody knows the terrain better than those that live there. Hire on some local guides to your team to help you in your quest, and just go to areas where they've been seen, hopefully recently, and just use your equipment and your collection devices, and hopefully, you know, if luck's with you, then you'll have success.
First, you got to get to Nepal, though. That's step one, I guess, or somewhere like it.
Yeah, dude, you know, they're the only country that doesn't have a square flag.
Even Sir David Attenborough, the literal voice of the well-loved Planet Earth documentary series, has said in interviews that, quote, there may be something to the abominable snowman mystery. References to the Yeti in the modern era span across pop culture and beyond. The creature has gone from obscure urban legend to a marketing icon, and what follows are but just a few of dozens of examples. The classic stop-motion holiday films made by Rankin and Bass feature the Yeti, naming the creature the Abominable Snowman of the North, or Bumble for short. Bumble would appear in Rudolph the Red-Nosed Reindeer in 1964, and again in Rudolph the Red-Nosed Reindeer and the Island of Misfit Toys in 2001. The Yeti has made numerous appearances in The Simpsons, the animated television program, appearing in both holiday specials and in-story character hallucinations, and canon episodes, including one storyline where Mo Sislak, the proprietor of Mo's Tavern, is revealed to be the adopted child of a Himalayan Yeti. Due to its association with ice, snow, and unforgiving climates, the name Yeti was also adopted by a company which specializes in the manufacture of temperature-resistant coolers and stainless steel tumblers. Founded in 2006 by Roy and Ryan Siders, the Yeti Company is currently headquartered in Austin, Texas. Perhaps a testament to the built-in recognition that their company name earned them, the organization's official logo is simply the word Yeti in bold white text over a black field. The specialty coffee company Black Rock Coffee Bar recently rolled out a new series of caffeine-infused energy drinks under their Fuel series. An advertisement for the product, prominently displayed on the windows of some locations, features an ice-laden, shaggy white creature holding the beverage with a label that reads, Yeti approved. As the parent of a one-year-old, I would be remiss if I did not mention the Yeti's appearance in the Sesame Street special, Elmo the Musical, Elmo's Biggest Everest, wherein the titular hero, perhaps one of the only monsters as famous as the Yeti itself, meets a friendly incarnation named Nettie the Yeti, who helps Elmo ascend the peak of Mount Everest. A whimsical musical number follows and concludes the story. Rambling as that may have been, this is a highly incomprehensive list. The name Yeti has appeared on the labels of clothing, toys and collectibles, off-road vehicles, and plenty of other disjointed pieces of merchandise. References to odes to the Yeti in this episode were kept intentionally light, but there are plenty of horror movies, comic books, and novels which cast the Yeti in a much more savage silhouette. As a final pop culture nod, the Wampa of Star Wars may have been inspired by the Yeti, with some early production notes suggesting that it was, at one time, meant to have a much more active role in the narrative of my favorite Star Wars film, The Empire Strikes Back. As recently as 2023, a mysterious hair sample was discovered in the Himalayas and sent off for genetic testing. It was purported to be a sample of Yeti hair, and many held their breath in eager anticipation for the results. Sadly, the sample turned out to belong to an ordinary horse, but that doesn't change the fact that many people, for centuries and on into the modern day, believe that the Yeti is a real, actual creature. In some ways, it seems the Yeti is more than just a legendary monster from the mountains of Asia. It speaks to something in us, something with which we identify, despite the ambiguity surrounding its existence. While some may scratch their heads when presented with terms Mothman, Ogua, or, I don't know, let's say, the Dover Demon, the word Yeti is one which has almost universal recognition. Perhaps made all the more evident by the exotic and far-flung environment in which it is said to live, the mystery of the Yeti lingers on, well after the earliest sightings of the 1800s. Many may doubt its existence, but until a more comprehensive study of the Himalayan mountains can be made by the cryptozoological community, an event not likely to occur anytime soon, we may never know for sure what lurks behind the legend of the Yeti. Or of other snowmen most abominable. You've been listening to House of Monsters, presented by the Small Town Monsters Broadcasting Network. Written, edited, and created by Aaron Deese. Executive producer Seth Breedlove. Tune in next time for Volume 4, The Red Man's Luck.